This is a two-hour special with Dr. Orna Gill about the COVID-19 coronavirus.
Hello, Reading. This is Dr. Orna Gill on the Dr. Orna Gill Show here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM in Your Talk Radio. Today we're going to talk about COVID-19, the coronavirus, and we're going to talk about it in a very specific format where we have doctors, experts in the community and even outside the community who will give us good information, real information, and not the kind of information that we're sort of gathering from all the commercial broadcasting systems. This is actually a good time to be in broadcasting because we airwaves are probably the best way to get the best information at this time. So let's go ahead and start by introducing the people that are here in the studio with me today. We have, of course, myself, Dr. Orna Gill. We have Linda Bott, the illustrious Linda Bott, radio show talk hostess extraordinaire.
Hello.
We have Jessica Canopy. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I am Jessica Canopy. I'm the emergency manager at Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Good. And then we have also Dr. James Taggart. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Dr. Gill. My name is James Taggart, and I'm the director of emergency services for the emergency department at Shasta Regional Medical Center.
And we have Casey Fatch, the CEO. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, Casey Fatch, Chief Executive Officer of Shasta Regional Medical Center. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure. And we have Lynanne Foster, the Director of Marketing at Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure. So let's start off by talking about what is the coronavirus, what is COVID-19, why did they name it COVID-19, and go from there. And I want to just get that really basic introduction started for us all before we get into all the stats and all of the advice and all of the new data. Keep in mind that this show today is being recorded on Wednesday afternoon, the 18th of March, 2020, and we have new updates every day. And these updates are going to come to you directly through KCNR. Thanks to Shasta Regional Medical Center, they're going to provide the radio station with updates every day. So this information you're hearing now is really coming to you in real time from Wednesday, 1:30. So let's get started with definitions. Who would like to talk about the definition here of COVID-19?
This is Dr. Taggart. So COVID-19 is the name of the disease that this coronavirus causes.
Okay.
And it's that simple.
And it was identified in December of 2019. So it's basically December 19. So
that's correct.
Yes, good. So, and then coronaviruses usually affect animals, right? But in this case, they can be transmitted to humans. Do we know how they are transmitted to humans?
Well, there are different. I believe the MARS was transmitted from in the Middle East from donkeys. Then you have another mammal called a civet, and those can transmit coronaviruses to humans in the South Pacific. And then you also have bats.
And there was also the bird flu and that kind of thing too. So I want to talk about the real who right now do we know about that are infected and in California, and how are we dealing with it in general?
That's an excellent question. I think first it's important to note that right now in Shasta County, we have one case that has tested positive for the coronavirus, and they have actually made a full recovery. So that's important to note. In California, according to the CDPH, the California Department of Public Health, there are 598 positive cases.
Okay. And what about deaths?
Let me see here. Thank you, Dr. Tadde. We have 13 documented deaths from the coronavirus in California.
Okay. And since we only have one case here, why are we? What are the best ways that we can prevent rather than react? And how do we advise our population, our community, our friends, our families, our listeners? How do we keep it away? Are we going to be able to?
That's an excellent question. You know, the coronavirus is a virus, and it's spread via respiratory droplets. So that's why the Department of Public Health has recommended this social distancing, as they call it. So social distancing simply means that we are going to stay about 5 to 6 feet away from each other, because that's how far respiratory droplets generally travel.
Hmm. Okay. And what about isolation? What is the difference between isolation, quarantine, and social distancing? And why is it important?
Well, social distancing is, like Jessica stated, is avoiding large groups of people in the public. And then isolation is one step further, isolating yourself from others because you have symptoms that could be consistent with coronavirus and COVID-19.
And then quarantine is when you have been exposed to someone with known coronavirus, and that means like totally for 14 days, complete quarantine.
Well, or until at least you've had a negative test.
Oh, I see. So, and how many negative tests do you need to have in order to qualify as negative?
That's a good question. I believe it's 2 negative tests.
Okay.
And what is the testing procedure?
Testing procedure is a nasal and pharyngeal swab that's placed in a special medium, and they do, it's called PCR.
Mm-hmm.
Blanking on the name of PCR.
All right, that's fine. PCR.
Polychain.
Okay, we got it.
Polymerase chain reaction.
Yeah, okay. Polymerase chain.
Okay.
Polymerase chain.
All yeah. Right.
PCR stands for polymerase chain reaction.
Okay. So it's placed in the swab is placed in a container. And okay. So I'm just because people are talking about it all the time, and the White House recently has just showed some kind of thing with plastic containers, and so we're looking at that, and it's like, oh, is it as simple as are we going to come up soon with a swab, or is it, you know, everybody's just got these big questions. What is the test and how do we test and the test?
Right. So, yeah, I think it's basically, like you said, the swab that's a nasopharyngeal swab. That's where the virus lives, and that's how it kind of becomes drops into the lungs and infects your lungs. And so we want to get it at its entrance point. And I believe it takes how long to turn around, do you guys know?
24 hours.
24
well,
hours.
Let's back up, because that depends on what lab you send the specimen to.
Uh-huh.
So if we're sending to private labs, it takes a little bit longer than if we're testing locally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break and talk more about the COVID virus diagnosis, means of treatment, how we prevent it, and what our hospitals are doing. Stay with us.
Thank you. Make this year turtly awesome with the Turtle Bay membership. Get free access to world-class exhibits, exciting animal shows, towering playgrounds, and much more. Family memberships are just $90. That's less than $10 a month for a whole year of fun. Get yours today at turtlebay.org.
Welcome to the Year of the Bear, Black Bear Diner's year-long 25th anniversary celebration. Black Bear Diner first started serving up bear-sized portions of family favorites in 1995, and they are marketing this milestone with a year of tasty specials, fun celebrations, and a continued commitment to give back to the community. Stay tuned and be sure to stop by the Black Bear Diner on Hilltop Drive in Cypress and Redding all year long, and help us celebrate 25 years of
Black Bear Diner.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless pets.
The Redding Civic Auditorium brings a wide variety of shows to the North State. Go to reddingcivic.com and join their mailing list for free. Get early access to tickets and first dibs on the best seats in the house. Grab a drink with friends at the fully stocked bar or locally roasted coffee. Snacks and other beverages at the River Rock Cafe. Enjoy lidded beverages throughout the auditorium at every show. If you want to know about the best concerts coming to the North State, go to reddingcivic.com to learn more.
I'm Carlene Niver, and I have some exciting news about my restaurant, Deja Vu, voted best breakfast. We are now serving beer and wine to complement your experience with us. Try one of our many flavors of mimosas, or try one of our new delicious creations, like Morning Sunshine, our version of a screwdriver. For our coffee lovers, we are known for our cozy atmosphere with a mixture of traditional and specialty drinks. I invite you to start your day with us, whether you are craving breakfast or lunch. Located in the historic Lorenz Hotel in the heart of downtown Reading, on California Street, open 7 days a week from 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Make this year turtly awesome with the Turtle Bay membership. Get free access to world-class exhibits, exciting animal shows, towering playgrounds, and much more. Family memberships are just $90. That's less than $10 a month for a whole year of fun. Get yours today at turtlebay.org.
This is a two-hour coronavirus special with Dr. Orna Gill.
Welcome back, Reading. We're talking here on KCNR 96.5 FM on the Dr. Orna Gill Show. I'm Dr. Orna Gill, here hosting a very fascinating talk with some very important and expert people in our community, here serving our community, and here to talk straight, talk to you about what we're doing, how we're doing it, and why we're doing it. So we found out that we only have one case here in Shasta County that is tested positive but has recovered and is now negative times two. So the question I have is, we wanted to know, number two, what are the symptoms that we should look for with COVID-19? And when should we go to the ER? Please tell us a little bit about that, Dr. Tarrant.
Okay, the symptoms are going to include cough, fever, which is defined as 100 or higher, for corona specifically, and other respiratory symptoms like shortness of breath. Mm-hmm. Other symptoms that people I've noticed in the community that they're getting concerned about is that they have a runny nose, or they have a cough, but they may not have a fever, or they may not have the shortness of breath. And it's those patients that I would recommend you stay home, avoid the public spaces so that you don't spread whatever it is you do have. But it's when you develop the fever and the shortness of breath that you need to start to become more concerned. Now, that being said, probably most of these people do not have risk factors, that being traveled from China or Iran or Europe, or being exposed from someone that had COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So their risk, your risk for having, you know, COVID-19 because you have a runny nose and a cough is very low. At least at this point, that is still what we're seeing.
Well, that's reassuring.
Yeah, that's good to know. Let me ask you, how do you know if you've been exposed to someone or not? My understanding is that a lot of these COVID-19 infections are undisclosed or undocumented because they haven't been tested. Up to 86% were not documented by January 23rd. After that, obviously, they were more identified. But we still have what's called, is there a tip of the iceberg effect that we just simply not testing and not seeing it, and we will soon see it emerge?
Yes, I suspect that there are people in different communities that are having the coronavirus that have mild disease. The majority of all these people will have mild disease and will recover. So obviously, if you're not testing, you're not going to know, correct? Mm-hmm. But we have had difficulty in ramping up the availability of testing. Mm-hmm. And so at this time, we're keeping testing for those that are needing it most, mm-hmm. right? And those are going to be patients that either have risk factors, the symptoms, or requiring hospitalization.
So in one way, that we're mitigating by really concentrating the small resources we have on the very vulnerable at-risk patients. And even if you do have the virus, but you're relatively healthy, that will allow the population in general to develop immunity. Is that something that we can assume?
Well, maybe. We don't know that yet. Okay. They're still doing studies to determine if once you have the illness, you are then immune to it. Mm-hmm. I suspect that is the case because they have found that treating patients with the COVID-19 mm-hmm. from plasma of patients that have antibodies, okay, actually help these patients improve. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a whole nother discussion about immunity, passive immunity, active immunity.
Yeah.
And we can talk about that in a little bit. But going back to the symptoms and mild disease, the importance is trying to eliminate and slow down the spread of the virus by keeping people home.
Okay.
If you have mild symptoms or if you have no symptoms at home, social distancing is the plan to try and flatten that curve. Mm-hmm. That curve being the number of patients a day that end up acquiring COVID-19.
The area under the curve is not going to change, though. It just means that everyone's going to get it, but they're going to get it in sequence rather than all at once.
What it does is it helps hospitals, first responders, and everyone involved to respond to the crisis so that we don't run out of resources.
Okay. And coming from a layman here in the medical field, I think that we've never really heard, as a general public, we've not lived during the term social distancing. We've not lived in a time when every event's been canceled in every theater event, the Cool April Nights, the list goes on about things that have been canceled through March and April. And so everybody's like, when are we going to get back to normal? When are we going to get back to normal? So this is a very important topic right now to be running about what you can do to help prevent it, what you do if you have signs, in which you were talking about 100 degrees, was the temperature, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and aches and pains, but if you've got sniffles, that's not enough. You need to have the fever.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And shortness of breath and cough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what are we doing from a hospital perspective to ramp up our message to patients in the community to make sure that we have the resources to give to the community, to communicate with the community, to let everyone know how and what and where and when to do it?
Well, so we direct everybody to the county's website, the county public department of health. They've got a little COVID-19 virus looking icon on their website, and it kind of gives you the update of what's going on in Shasta County. You can also get linked to you can get linked to the State Department, California's Department of Health Services as well. But from a hospital perspective, one of the things that we're doing is we're daily assessing our supply levels. We're looking out to maybe 4 weeks to 6 weeks and assessing what, you know, what our supply levels could need to look like then as well, and keeping an eye on our supply chain. And you know, because again, a lot of this where this virus started was in one of the main manufacturing provinces in China, where two of the major medical supply companies in the United States, a lot of gloves and gowns and caps and that type of stuff that we use for personal protective equipment in the hospital are manufactured. And those plants are starting to come back online. But at this point, you know, we're able to tap into the emergency management supplies as well. But right now at Shasta, we're doing pretty well. We certainly want to encourage people, if they have an elective surgery coming up, to let us know that they're not going to come, and so we can save those resources, because we had four people just not show up today for surgery, and you know, that's unfortunate, and so we'd like to get that message out to where, because we do want to make sure that we have enough supplies and also save that resource for people who do need it.
I see. So when do you project to stop elective surgeries, if at all?
We don't at this point. We're looking pretty good.
Okay.
Not to say it's not going to change, but we're doing calls with our supply chain people every day.
Oh, wow.
So, and we've got also a request into Senator Dolly. We're working with him as far as being able to help us with supplies, and we're working with the county as well, because the county has a little bit of a stockpile, I believe. So, but we'll see how that works out if we need to.
Yeah.
Well, when did you start the triage?
Well, we started triaging patients. I think you mean screening, maybe? Screening.
Yeah, outside the hospital. Yeah. I mean, can you share with our listeners what that looks like and what that means?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for asking. We started triaging patients outside, screening for the COVID virus, rather. Let's see, Tuesday the 6th, I want to say. And basically what that looked like is setting up a tent outside of the ER it started, and asking people what their symptoms are before they enter the hospital. Because what we want to prevent is exposure to our sick, our elderly, our vulnerable populations within the hospital, and also our staff, too, because they have to continue to come to work. So we started screening outside of the ER for those symptoms, and then a couple days later, we started screening outside of the main hospital as well.
Mm-hmm. And I saw that you have a bunch of different tents up. What are those tents for?
Again, the tents, similar to screening outside of the hospital, the point is to eliminate exposure to our vulnerable populations and our staff. So the tents are to screen and treat patients who maybe aren't critically ill, who have mild symptoms outside of the hospital.
Okay, that's very, very critical to know. And we're going to be right back after a few words from our sponsors and our commercials. But I want to come back and talk more about what, you know, who should be scared and why should we be scared? Should we even be scared? And how does that impact our treatment?
This is the Dr. Orna Gill Show.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need on-time, first-rate medical attention. Shasta Regional Medical Center, located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Redding, has the fastest possible transit and admission of emergency patients. We at Shasta Medical Center are dedicated to all patients who need care, regardless of their ability to pay. Shasta Regional Medical Center, delivering patient-centered health care with compassion, dignity, and respect for every patient and their family.
Orchard Nutrition Center asks, what does it mean to be local?
It's the Little League baseball team. It's a smile and a wave from a neighbor you've known for years. Helping out a stranger just because it's the right thing to do.
It's a lot like Orchard Nutrition Center, caring about the people and the community that you call home.
Orchard Nutrition Center, since 1982.
We're all in it together.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004. But our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
For many people, their faith, their family, and their health are the most important things in their lives. Every day, the work that I do influences these things. Children go to college, couples move into their first home, people retire, businesses start, and charities are supported. All of this in part because of the work I do. I can make complicated things clearer so people understand them. I can solve problems and find solutions. People need someone to put their interests first. And for many people, I am that someone. I can lend an ear, stand with you during life's ups and downs, and provide that advice at just the right time. That's why I love my job. That's why I'm a financial advisor, Susan Eastman, with Wells Fargo Advisors in Redding, California, 243-7561. Once again, this is Susan Eastman with Wells Fargo Advisors. I'd love to be your financial advisor. Please give me a call at 243-7561.
This is a pre-recorded two-hour special about the coronavirus with Dr. Orna Gill.
Welcome back, Reading. Ladies and gentlemen of Reading, this is Dr. Orna Gill and the Dr. Orna Gill Show, 96.5 FM, KCNR. We're back here with our expert panel talking about the COVID-19 pandemic and what to expect from our doctors, hospitals, ERs, and ourselves and our families and our communities, how we conduct ourselves and that kind of thing. I wanted Casey Fatch, the CEO of Shasta Medical Center, to tell us a little bit about some of the policies now in place in the hospital that we prepared for in order to prevent this virus from spreading.
Sure. So what we've done is we've modified our visitors policy at this point, where a patient can have one visitor at a time, and that visitor is also screened at the door and asked for, you know, kind of, do you fit the risk profile? Have you been out of the country or even out of county? We ask most of the time, and then that kind of triggers a couple of other questions. But then what'll happen is we've also eliminated any visitation to patients that are currently under isolation. And that's an unusual measure, but these patients are specifically vulnerable to any type of infection, and so this is just a protective measure that we put in place with under the advisement of Dr. Miles, our infectious disease specialist, and then we've also closed the campus basically to the general public. We have a lot of our volunteers are all at home. Our nursing students are gone. Hmm. We have people that come and use our cafeteria frequently because it's, you know, when we're back open, you guys got to try it. It's pretty awesome. It's a hell of a salad bar.
Yeah.
So at that point, you know, we've definitely taken some measures to try to, again, you know, create those groups of less than 10 because, you know, our volunteers like to congregate with each other. They're great people, but, you know, it is what it is, and we've got to keep the groups down. So, and then we also got to try to minimize the hospital's risk of that could come in from the outside. So that's and protect our patients.
Okay, very good. But,
and to get an idea of if you have a question for getting ready to come to the hospital, go to ShastaRegional.com and our current visitor policy will be updated frequently.
Sounds good. That's very helpful. Thank you very much, okay. Casey.
Thank you.
When we come into the tents, we're talking back to the tents because everyone gets freaked out on those tents. Looking at them, it looks a little scary. What happens? Who goes into the tents and why? And then and who leaves the tents? Where do they go? Do they go into isolation? Do they go home? Do they go in the hospital? How do you guys manage this?
That's an excellent question. So say you come into the hospital or you're coming into the ER for fever and cough. You would be triaged by a registered nurse and a provider outside, again, to limit the exposure within the facility. And they will perform any testing that's necessary and treat you outside as long as you have those mild symptoms, right? So your vital signs are stable. You're not requiring emergent medical care. So we'll provide you with a mask and treat you outside.
Mm-hmm. Now, once you leave that tent, how long does the tent need to be? Is the tent itself, does it have any kind of infectious surfaces on it, like on the inside? Those droplets live for 9 hours, I understand, the surface.
Yes, but that's everybody has a mask on, mm-hmm. right? So the patients are having a mask on to protect them as well, and it's cleaned.
Okay, good to know. Well, these are all, like, very practical questions that we want to know in terms of how this is addressed in our community. What about the fear factor in the community? How scared should we really be for ourselves and for our loved ones? Is it overblown, you think?
Well, I think the fear has certainly assisted people in believing that social distancing is recommended and required to help slow the transmission of this virus. And those that need to be more concerned are those that are older, 60 or older, those that have lung disease, mm-hmm. Emphysema, COPD from smoking, mm-hmm. Anyone that has immune compromise, such as patients that have cancer, maybe on chemotherapy, mm-hmm. Patients with diabetes. Mm-hmm. That is a large population of people, right?
Yes.
So you want to be able to avoid acquiring this virus from someone else, and staying home and out of the public will help with that. You know, for patients that are wondering, well, when do I need to go to the ER? You know, if you're having symptoms of possible viral illness, mm-hmm. possibly coronavirus, cough, fever, shortness of breath, and you have these other medical problems, mm-hmm. I would come into the emergency department sooner rather than later if you feel like your symptoms are getting worse, because we do need to see and treat you. Yeah. The issue with coronavirus, COVID-19, is that there isn't a specific treatment at this time.
Yeah.
You know, it's supportive care. It's providing respiratory support your breathing, support your blood pressure, and right now there's obviously a lot of research in treating, you know, COVID-19 in addition to preventing COVID-19. Mm-hmm. You know, they found that using, I mentioned earlier, I think the convalescent antibodies from the plasma of patients mm-hmm. that had COVID-19 and got better, mm-hmm. their plasma and antibodies that they produced mm-hmm. may be given to patients that have the illness, which they did. They've done for decades, years ago when, mm-hmm. when there was the measles. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, there really is no treatment at this time, but Hopkins is doing research as we speak. Mm-hmm. Well, not research. It's a process that requires multiple disciplines such as hematology and the blood bank and mm-hmm. An infectious disease, obviously.
Lab time.
Yeah, I mean, we really want to talk about this to understand why we are basically in the new going dark ages. Basically, we're going dark on in terms of, like, no more movie theaters and no more auto shows and no more hanging out and no more going over to your neighbor's house and no more, you know, doing things like that.
Yeah, it's definitely that large group of people that's putting you at risk and being in close quarters with others.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's important to also point out we learned a lot. We've been down this road before with these type of viruses. And you know, you go back to the Spanish flu in 1918 and you look what the measures that you know, different regions took. And so you take Philadelphia, which basically did nothing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you look at St. Louis, which acted as how we are. They canceled events.
Yeah.
And Philadelphia per capita had 8 times mortality rate.
Wow.
So this is evidence-based practice. Canceling this stuff is the right thing to do. I'm not happy about it. I'll be
Nobody's
honest with you.
Happy about it, but no. we
I
need
mean,
to know why.
Closing restaurants yeah. down and bars
yeah.
down
and
events. You know, nobody likes that, but you know what?
Yeah.
It's better than the alternative. And the what Dr. Tegger was talking about earlier about the graph and the number of cases at one time, you know, if we get inundated as a system with, you know, if we don't take these measures into play and we get inundated, it's too much on the system. There's too, you know, everybody talks about not enough ventilators and all that type of stuff. You know, we have the right amount of numbers for that. So, you know,
okay.
people don't have to be scared about that stuff.
Yeah.
But we have to act responsibly.
Yeah.
And that means closing restaurants. Closing gyms, you know, and
even and, bars.
Well, yeah, even bars, unfortunately.
Keep yourself stocked.
So you know, you just so those measures are going to be effective, and we've already seen them be effective because it has slowed down in California.
Wow.
And so that's that one case though from the you know the pandemic of 1918. Is basically what this is all based on is reducing everybody's exposure to each other.
That's good to understand why we're doing what we're doing. We are going to we are expecting a caller. We have a couple callers calling in. The first caller calling in is Dr. Elad Gil. He is a subject expert on the COVID-19 virus. And he holds a PhD in molecular biology, a bachelor's in applied math and molecular biology, PhDs from MIT. And he is very involved in studying this phenomenon from a mathematical point of view. He's also sheltering at home, I believe. And I also have to disclose he's my brother. Dr. Elad Gil, welcome to the show.
And let's go right through the break with us. So our producer's putting up 2 minutes. We're going to go. This is important. We're glad to have you on the air that we're going to be running this. So, again, welcome to the show, Dr. Orna Gil Show.
Yeah. Welcome back, Reading. This is Dr. Orna Gil on the Dr. Orna Gil Show. I introduced my brother, Elad Gil, Dr. Elad Gil. My understanding is that you combine your knowledge of molecular biology and applied math to interpret mathematical models of viral spread. I wanted to start by saying hello to you and then confirming that. Is that correct?
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me on. You know, I think in reality, you know, I wouldn't call myself an expert on this. I think there's epidemiologists who study this all day long, but I have been following it closely, and I have worked in virology labs and sort of related areas in the past, and have been sort of keenly reading through the literature and tracking what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And what can you tell us about the models and what they predict, and how do they come about? How did we develop these models?
Sure. So epidemiologists or people who study these sorts of outbreaks have for many years developed different models of how viruses spread, and then they can mathematically predict the rate at which a virus will grow in a society unless certain countermeasures are taken. And often the key factor that they hone in on is something known as the R0 of the disease, which is really the growth factor of the disease.
Right.
And the way to think about R0 is if the R0 is 2, it means for every person who's infected, they're likely to infect 2 other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, for flu, the R0, or for a typical flu, the R0 is somewhere around 1.4 or 1.5, which means for every person who's infected, they will then go on to infect 1.5 people or so on average. The R0 for COVID-19 looks like it's closer to around 3,
wow,
which means that for every person who's infected, without social distancing or other measures, 3 other people will get infected.
Usually what happens is,
you know, if you have a disease that hasn't really been seen in a population before, so for example, you know, most people at this point have never been exposed to this type of coronavirus, or have been exposed to the flu or other things, or, you know, the reason you vaccinate people is so that you create something known as herd immunity, which means that if lots of people take a vaccine, if I get sick and the virus tries to jump from me into you, but you've been vaccinated, it hits a dead end,
mm-hmm,
and that knocks down the R0. And so the reason we do vaccinations in society is to basically prevent these diseases from spreading, because they just can't hop to other people easily. If you're dealing with something like COVID-19, which the human population has not seen before, then it's going to spread much more easily until enough people have been infected in the past that they mount what's known as an immune response to it. Their immune system can block the disease, and then you stop getting as much spread. And so eventually, if you have enough people in a society infected, you really knock down the spread of the disease, assuming you haven't done social distancing or other things to sort of decrease spread to begin with.
That's a very interesting point. So what are your thoughts on travel bans vis-a-vis these kinds of this kind of information?
Yeah, it depends on where you're traveling to and where you're traveling from. So, you know, ironically, two of the countries that have the lowest birth rates now are Singapore and Taiwan, which saw very early outbreaks, but really got on top of them rapidly through testing to see who's infected and then asking those people to self-quarantine or isolate. And so they've tamped down the growth rates in those countries. And so to some extent, even though those were the earliest places where this broke out, at this point, they're actually now quarantining new travelers coming in because they don't want to re-spark the disease.
I see.
You know, at this point, people are really viewing Europe as the new epicenter.
Wow.
Italy is probably, 2 weeks ahead or so of Spain and France and a few other countries where it's really starting to break out rapidly. And then in the U.S., you know, the West Coast, in particular Seattle, Bay Area, and then New York on the East Coast are sort of the ones that seem to be having the earliest waves really starting up for this epidemic.
And you yourself actually are in San Francisco and sheltering at home. Is that what they call it? Sheltering at
Correct.
Home? Yeah.
Sheltering in place, yeah.
So sheltering in place. So what's that like? What is that like? Torture or what is it like?
Yeah. You know, so far it isn't too bad.
Uh-huh.
And usually these things start off pretty loose. And then if the disease spread doesn't really slow down enough, things get to be stronger restrictions. But so far what it's meant is that they're requesting that people not go out of the house unless it's necessary in terms of travel for work or if you're going to the grocery store. They do encourage people to go on walks if you're not going in a large group. So if it's just, you know, you and your family or you and one other person, they tend to say it's okay, but they don't want you to be in groups of 4 or more. You know, today for the first time at the local grocery store, they actually put in place a security guard in a line, because they were only letting in so many people at a time into the grocery store.
Wow.
And so it feels like restrictions are starting to get a little bit stronger.
Hmm.
And my anticipation is that if you don't really see a change in how rapidly COVID is spreading, that the restrictions will get stronger and stronger over time.
I know that in Italy they're giving out fines for people who are outside and not, you know, without proper documentation or without proper reason to be out. So they can get more strict. And I know that in China, pretty draconian measures were taken on populations of 60 million people. And do you know anything about what they did and how they did it and how effective that was?
Yeah, my sense is it varied a lot by city in China. So in Wuhan, which was really the epicenter in China where all this started, which is actually a very large city. It's a city of about 10 million people. In central Wuhan, where I think the epidemic is really centered, is something like 6 million people. My understanding is that they had, to your point, very draconian measures where people couldn't leave the house. If you were caught with a fever, you either had to stay at home and self-isolate, or they would have you move into some of the hospitals that they built where, you know, there was all these news stories and things on Twitter around how, you know, in 2 weeks or a week they built, you know, massive new hospitals. And really those were just quarantine centers where they had rows and rows of beds where they'd have people stay to prevent them from spreading the illness to others. In other cities, my sense it was much more about both people isolating at home, as well as my sense is that if you did go out, they would check your temperature repeatedly. So, you know, they would check your temperature when you left your apartment building, when you got into your building at work, when you left your building again. And my sense is they also did things like they taped out the floors of elevators to indicate, you know, only 4 people can stand in this elevator in a given time, and you have to be in your own square. They had tissues in elevators, so you could push the button with the tissue instead of with your fingers. So, and then I think there were some requirements around things like wearing masks if you're outside and things like that.
Interesting. So those are what we call more draconian, and I think it is because they have a centralized authoritarian government that can control the population, which is relatively homogenous. I think, I don't know, in cases where you have a heterogeneous population with different density of population, do you think that those are measures that are realistic for us to envision? Do you think those are measures that may ever come into place? Do you think they're something that we may need to brace ourselves for in San Francisco or even out here in Reading?
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to get to the point of China, in part because we are a liberal democracy, and in part, you know, in reality, if you take a giant step back, perhaps the best model for all this is South Korea. And in South Korea, what they did very early on, and I think, unfortunately, the U.S. missed an early opportunity to do this, they really focused on what's known as testing, tracing, and isolation. And so what they did there is they tested very large numbers of people, you know, 10,000 plus people a day for COVID. And then anybody who was sick or who tested positive, whether they were sick or not, were both asked to quarantine or self-isolate. And they had, you know, strong fines for people who broke those quarantines.
Okay.
And then in parallel, they would trace who are all the people you're in contact with.
Hmm.
And then they'd test all those people. And anybody who was positive, they would keep isolating. And so what they did is, without having to shut down all of society, but by focusing on the people who were actually sick and then tracing the contacts of those people, they were able to put a lid on the disease, even though it had been growing really fast.
So
and to me, that feels like one of the smarter models of this, because you're not shutting down all of society and really hurting people's livelihood and ability to work.
Yeah.
You know, you're really focusing on the people who are sick.
I see. That's a very interesting point, actually. So testing and tracing. I wanted to ask you what you know about the newest and latest developments in vaccine and treatments right now.
Yeah, so there's positive news there, although it may take some time. So on the vaccine side, this is the fastest I know of that anybody's ever gone from isolating a virus, sequencing it, and then actually putting a vaccine into people. I think it took something like 66 days from the from the sequencing of the virus to a vaccine, which is amazing. Usually these things take years.
Wow.
And so there's a company called Moderna, which has a very fast sort of delivery method, and they went into vaccine, their vaccine went into people earlier this week. So that's an amazing scientific accomplishment.
Where is that vaccine, what are the vaccines based? Where did they give it? The Moderna, where is that? Where did they give the vaccine?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where the trial is being run.
Okay.
I believe it's in part in Seattle, but that could be wrong. So, okay. I would double check that. But they're moving very fast. The bar on a vaccine is very high, of course, because, you know, for most people, for, you know, say 80% of people, COVID is basically like a bad flu and, you know, you recover and you go on with life. For probably on the order of 10 to 15%, it's more severe and it requires some form of hospital visit or hospitalization. And then for somewhere on the order of 1 to 3% of people, it requires ICU. And, you know, in some cases, people are put on respirators for many weeks. And so the bad part of this disease is the number of severe cases versus everybody suffering from it. And so if you're putting a vaccine into what's largely a population that's going to be okay with exposure to this disease, you have to have a very high safety bar.
Mm-hmm.
And so right, what they're doing now is a small, what's known as phase one clinical trial to see, you know, is this safe in people and are they going to react well to it? And then if that works, then in 2 to 3 months, they'll do a much larger trial to see if it's efficacious or if it works well in people.
I see.
And then if that works, that's when they move into large-scale manufacturing. And so the very soonest I've heard people who are more expert than I talk about a vaccine being realistically available in the broader population would be sometime in 2021. And that assumes everything goes magically perfectly. so I think we still have some time before there's a vaccine, unless something unusual happens. In terms of treatments, there's a few things that are being pursued right now. I think there's over 60 clinical trials in China going on. There's a handful getting up and running in the U.S., and there's a few things that people are excited about, and again, we'll see whether they work or not. You have to really do what's known as a blinded clinical trial to see if something's working or not. But there's a drug from a company called Gilead called Remdesivir that people are looking into. There's older drugs like chloroquine that people are exploring as a potential prophylactic or preventative. So there's a lot of research going on. There's some HIV-related drugs that are people are trying to reposition. And so I think people are trying a lot of different things. And as we get to larger and larger clinical trials for these things, we'll start to see whether they work or not. So, you know, we should expect in the next, you know, 3 to 6 months to see whether there's any good progress there. But one other thing that I think is interesting, and we'll see if it works, is a company known as Regeneron. It's a, you know, 30-year-old public biotech company that's very well regarded, is developing an antibody therapy as well. And so they have some initial antibodies that they're going to start testing soon, which is very fast as well. So I think the scientific and biotech and pharmaceutical community has actually moved incredibly fast to start to develop vaccines and drugs and other things. And you know, people always talk about how evil pharmaceutical companies are, but honestly, in this case, I feel like they're doing everything they can, and it's impressive to see, you know, these companies mobilize to try and help us with this pretty serious global problem.
Very interesting, and a very, very interesting, brilliant perspective and excellent information, very precise and helpful. Really appreciate your input, Dr. Gill. And
thank you so much.
And I really appreciate your contribution to this very important conversation. So we are going to take a break right now. This is Dr. Orna Gill and the Dr. Orna Gill Show. KCNR, we are every woman and every man, as it were, today.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.